Time for another edition of the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackus here with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. You can reach us with all of your home renovation questions. 514-790-0800 is our phone number, and it is also our text line. A reminder, if you text us, please leave a name so that we know who we are speaking with. Walter, how are you?
I'm doing very good. How are you?
I'm good. We were just talking about this devastating fire in Old Montreal and about, you know, still very much under investigation. They're investigating also, they're calling it a suspicious fire for now. But a lot has been brought up about building codes, problems with these older buildings. How are they maintained? Who is maintaining them? I want to get into that with you a little bit because one of the building in question was a restaurant, and up on top of the building was something called a hostel, where someone, you know, the owner was presumably renting out these rooms. And there have been reports of people who were staying there that, you know, they said some of these places didn't have windows, or they saw wires sticking out all over the place. Are there any things, Walter, that we can see with our own eyes without bringing in a building inspector that we should say, this is no good?
I mean, the obvious would be the fire alarm, the smoke alarms. If there's a central alarm panel, these are things usually that, you know, you could identify yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good practice would be for a building owner to hire a company that does yearly inspection on all their fire installations. So companies like Viking Prevention, for example. So they come. It becomes really their responsibility, not the owner of the building,
to know all the codes and stuff like that.
Well, they come, they check the fire extinguishers, they check the panel, they check the alarm sensors, the smoke sensors, and they make a report. Mm. And then, you know, if, you know, God forbid something happens, at least you're protected because you've hired a professional to take care of that for you.
Mm-hmm.
So for all the building owners out there that are trying to do it DIY, that's money, I think, very well spent in cases like this. Because, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes it could be a case of negligence that the tenant does a fire. But if you have not been proactive in securing your building, you could be held liable.
Mm. So, and tell me, Walter, the city has a responsibility. They have inspectors.
They do. But I mean, what are the chances of them inspecting every single building in Montreal? There's not enough inspectors to do that. So let's be more realistic about that. We can't put the burden on the city.
Mm-hmm.
They would usually make a complaint, or they just happen to do, a checkup here and there, but we can't really put the burden on the city. There's only so much they could do.
And there's only so many inspectors, as you say. But if you go into a building, for example, it could be a hotel, a hostel, or whatever, and you're renting a room, okay? You need to see if a fire is, should there be a fire escape? Should there be a fire plan? You know, when you go sometimes into hotels, when you close the door, it says, there's a little map that says, this is how to get out.
So one of the things, the more important things, the fire exits. So not necessarily a fire escape that you see from the outside, but they have a secondary staircase that you can get to. So an evacuation plan.
Mm-hmm.
You need to see fire extinguishers if there's no sprinkler system. And then you have to have self-closing doors.
Self-closing doors, meaning
when the door opens and you leave the room, if you forget to close it, it closes by itself.
And that's important because it contains the fire?
It contains the fire within the rooms where the fire starts.
Okay.
And you typically, it's a fire retardant door, which will give you about an hour. Technically.
An hour.
That's right. I mean, they say it's an hour of resistance to flames and what have you. These are things we're delaying. I mean, you're not going to stop the fire, but you're delaying it so people can get out, or for the firemen can come in and start assisting.
We should say this is still very much an active investigation. We're referring to this tragic fire that is being investigated in Old Montreal. Two people confirmed dead, and again, the investigation continues. But there are, you know, you say you should proactively check these things. There are markers. You need plans. You know, I think people tend to think, oh, I've rented a room. I've rented whatever. Everything is under control. But that's not always the case.
I mean, you know, and anywhere you're sleeping that you don't know, you're supposed to look. I mean, for and not just for necessarily fire, but also for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. For, you know, you look where the how good the door lock is. You look at the security in the building as far as, you know, people coming in and coming out. You know, looking at things for fire purposes is important. We don't usually, truth be told, we all
come thinks about it, honestly. No. It's not, you know, I've stayed in so many places around the world and I've never thought about it because I think, oh, well, the building must be up to code. But you just said there's not enough inspectors.
And not only that, code does not necessarily prevent the fire from happening. Mm. Like there's only so much the code could do.
Right.
There have been fires where everything was up to code and we had sprinklers and still people got hurt. So the idea behind it is for you to help yourself in a case like this. Understand, okay, this is the closest exit. This is where the staircase is.
But we don't think about it. I'm telling you, we don't. We ignore it. Okay, we have a first text message that came in, 514-790-0800. There are calls coming in as well. This one is from Ruth. Ruth says, I live in a bungalow and it was vacant for a while. Now I'm back with a newborn. I'm concerned about the furnace making loud booming noises when it comes on to wake me and the baby. My husband purchased mufflers, in quotations, which help not a lot. It's a quiet furnace. It's supposed to be a quiet furnace. Worth it? Does it work? Should we get a quiet furnace? Also, anything that can be done for air quality in a house. Cleaning ducts, installing a UV light. From what I read, it removes 70% of airborne particles. Thank you. So first, the furnace, the loud booming noise when it comes on.
There's two different reasons that could happen, and you know, that's why sometimes in certain questions, a phone call is more appropriate because you can get.
Yeah, this is a big one. Yeah, yeah. Ruth, call us if you want more information. Yeah. But about the booming sound.
So I usually ask the question if the furnace had been changed recently, and sometimes what happens is you get a stronger furnace and the duct or a stronger heat pump, and the duct cannot take the extra power in the machine. So the size of the ducts matter in this case. Or it could be an older furnace, not a variable speed furnace.
Remind people how often we should be changing our furnaces or inspecting
them. The furnace lasts a long time. There's people with furnaces that are 25 years old.
It's about 25 is the cutoff, right?
I think it's not a question. There's not really a cutoff, but truth be told, the new furnaces are a lot more efficient. Mm. So if you change them to the new ones, you have the quieter ones, the more efficient ones, the smaller ones as well. So there is an added value, but especially electric furnaces, there's not much that can break down on them. So they could last a long, long, long time. It's just a question of how efficient do you consider them to be.
But this booming, this loud boom.
Not necessarily. It could be more an issue with the duct per se. That's the size of the duct. The age of the furnace is to be investigated. The type of the furnace is to be investigated. But I mean, I would look if you are planning to replace the furnace, get the technician. It's very important to inspect the size of the ducts before they give you the what they suggest as a power to the new system that they're installing.
So if she brings in an expert to inspect,
about it this way: if you have, it's about how much pressure. How much air pressure a duct can take.
Mm.
If it's, you know, if a duct is constructed for to take pressures for 2 ton and you install a 3 ton machine, well, that's 50% more power in the duct. So that could create these types of scenarios.
Okay. But it's the sound itself doesn't mean that something dangerous is going on.
Not necessarily, no.
Okay. No. But should be inspected or checked out.
It should be inspected for sure.
Okay.
It doesn't hurt.
And you guys do that, or is there special furnace people?
Usually you're going to call a ventilation company for that.
Okay. 514-790-0800. Start calling us. Start texting us. Walter Assey is here, president of Renovco. He'll be answering your questions throughout the morning. That song means that Walter Assey, president of Renovco, is sitting right in front of me and he's taking your calls, answering your questions, 514-790-0800. Let Walter know what's going on with your house. If you've got questions, you can text us as well. Leave your name. When you text us, we have Diane on the line. Diane, can you hear us?
Oh, good morning. Thank you.
How are you? You're good?
Yes, we're fabulous weather.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Take it away for Walter.
I have a question for you. We insulated a garage. We put an addition on it, and we did the walls with Roxul and that, but I'm just wondering for the ceiling, is it better to use the Roxul in the ceiling or to spray it with the insulation foam?
What are you trying to achieve? Insulation
or soundproofing? I want to insulate the garage so that we can heat it a bit if we want to work in it in the wintertime.
So you don't care about soundproofing?
No, soundproofing is not an issue.
Okay, so definitely urethane for many reasons. Number one, Roxul is a great, great, great material, don't get me wrong. But the installation of it, you're going to have those seams. And if you know you make one mistake in the installation, there's a gap, it kind of defies the whole purpose. So if you want to get a more uniform coating, if you want to get something that is that is waterproof, if you wish, and you could get as much R value as you want, because you do have, I mean, the urethane is going to give you a better R value than the Roxul. It's going to be more expensive, but it's going to fill every possible gap there is if it's well applied.
Okay, great. So I don't have to worry about airspace or anything like that. That will.
That's the thing. But because with urethane, I mean, when you apply fiberglass or Roxul, most often than not, we see it's human error more than the product itself that creates problems. So you go up to attics, they have adequate R50 or R40. But then you see that, you know, whoever installed it kept a gap of 8 inches in certain areas or 6 inches in other areas. And then that installation becomes useless, really, because now the hot air is meeting the cold air. When you urethane, it's more dummy-proof, if you wish. So, you know, you can visually inspect it and say, okay, no, this is a good job. And it's never going to move either.
Perfect. Well, that was my question. I didn't know which were the two, because we'd like to do it as soon as possible while the weather is still good and that. So I appreciate your information, and I do listen to you every weekend. So.
Thank you, Diane.
And learned a lot.
Diane, thank you so much for calling. We have a text line, by the way, 514-790-04, Walter. this one is on the text line, same number, by the way. It says, I have a summer cottage in Saint-Donat. There is no actual heating, and I'm considering putting in a heat source for the cooler evenings. I was wondering if convection is better than electric baseboard heating. It is not for the winter. It's just to take the chill off when it's colder in the evenings. We usually close up the cottage for winter around Thanksgiving. Thank you from Kathleen. So it's not a four-season cottage.
Yeah. So convection, I mean, the answer is all day long.
Convection
all day long. Electric baseboard is probably the worst type of heating you can have in your home.
Because it dries the air?
It dries the air. It's not healthy. Yes, it's cheap to install, but you're not comfortable. You have to really, really humidify all winter long, or you're going to be really suffering from dry air, dryness.
But it's so funny because in the 80s and 90s, that's all we knew. We didn't realize all of us were drying out our sinuses.
Yeah, man, we also had brown fridges and avocado tubs and, you know.
Things change, Walter. I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you have those baseboards, you keep them, remove them, or just like...
I mean, in this case, I think he's installing a new... infrastructure. So go with the convection if you want to be comfortable. If it's a healthier source, and you know, to be honest with you, it even looks better, because you know, it's more small, more tucked in. It's not as, you know, it's not an eyesore. So definitely convection.
Pricey?
No, I mean, look, there's different brands, right? So what you want is forced. It's hot air that's being blown instead of just an element that is burning in the electric baseboard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the difference between the two. But there's different brands, and with the brands come, you know, the good brand that is more expensive. I'm not going to name them. But there are brands that are becoming a lot more affordable, and they do the job. They, you know, there's not much difference as far as the quality deliverance of the product, especially in his case. He's only going to use it probably in the autumn months.
Yeah, Kathleen, yeah, she closes it up before around Thanksgiving, so yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, so there's not going to be that much use issue. It's not like he's using it, she's using it all winter long.
Yeah.
So she's going to have longevity, even if she have, if you want the generic or the no-name brand.
Yeah. Question about heated floors. Because I enjoy the heated floors. We all love the heated floors. Is it complicated to, like, how does that installation happen? Are you ripping out the floors? Well, how does this work? And is it expensive?
It is not cheap, okay?
But is it worth it? Or is that just a comfort thing?
I mean, it depends where you're installing it, right? In a bathroom, I tell you all day long, I would install it. Because you want, that's, if there's one place you want it to be nice and warm in the
winter.
When
you're naked and stepping out of the shower, that foot better be heated.
There you go. And it's, it's a uniform low voltage heat that, you know, heat, we know all that hot air rises. So there's a lot of advantages to having a heat.
But
floor.
Does it heat the room? No.
It does heat the room.
Really?
So in a lot of cases, in a well-insulated home, you don't need another source of heat because it does heat the room.
So just based on the heated floors, you wouldn't need the extra heating in a bathroom.
If the home is adequately insulated. Mm. If it's not, that's another story. It will still be the main source of heat. You might need an auxiliary, like a forced air convection that will only kick in the colder days. Mm. So when it's minus 30, minus 40, then the convection would kick in. But more... it becomes really the main source of heat in those rooms.
But is it worth it? Comfort in the bathroom?
In a bathroom all day long, okay. I can tell you. And it's because it's a smaller area that the price makes sense. Like if you want to install it in
your kitchen,
for example, your basement.
Oh, the basement. Oh, boy.
It becomes really, really pricey. Now, if you barely spend time in the basement, it's not really a good investment at all. Because, you know, you're spending literally thousands of dollars.
Because if I'm understanding correctly, they have to rip the floor out.
They have to rip the floor out and they have to install a DITRA heat membrane. And then you have to put the wires. And then you have to apply a coat to protect the wires. And then you install the floor on top of that. So... It's also labor intensive work. It's not just about the cost of the material. The material is not cheap to begin with, but then you have to add the labor component, which is also not cheap.
And does that survive a flood in a basement?
In most cases, it does, believe
really?
It or not. I mean, we've had a lot of cases where people had water damages in heated floor environments and the heated floor kept on working.
So worth the price in that case?
That case, I've never, maybe in 300-400 inspections that we've had with heated wires, maybe I've seen one where something stopped working, and then I'm not even sure it was the water that caused it.
Okay, interesting. 514-790-0800. Start sending in those questions. Start calling in. Text us as well. Leave us your name. When you text us, you're listening to The Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brakes, and this is Walter Assey. Look at that. We've got calls coming in, Jimmy. You can reach us for your questions for Walter Assey, or you can text us on the same number, 514-790-0800. We are taking your renovation questions. We have a text for you, Walter, here. They didn't leave a name, but the question is, does polyurethane foam contain VOCs? I asked Walter during the commercial break, what is a VOC, first of all?
It's volatile organic compounds, and the answer is yes. So when they're going to be spraying it, if you notice, they always wear like their Tyvek suits and they put a mask. As the urethane is drying, it starts emitting the VOCs. It's
toxic?
VOCs is never, quote unquote, good for you. Mm. It's low quantities of VOCs and it kind of dissipates fairly quickly. So the crucial time is during the application. So if you well ventilate while it's being done, open the windows, keep them open for a while after, it's safe. It doesn't linger, if you wish, for a long period of time. But there is a period where you will have VOCs in the air.
So presumably don't do this in the middle of winter where you can't keep your windows open.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is definitely correct, yeah.
Okay, another text question here. Hello, we'll be doing our roof next spring. We would like your opinion about metal roofs versus shingles, pros and cons, please, for each. Thank you.
To make it simple, as far as cost, obviously metal roofs are more expensive. They're usually lifetime or 50 years. But having said that, there are now 50-year shingles. So, and you know, there's many more questions to ask in a case like this, because not every house would look nice with metal roofs.
I'm having a hard time picturing the metal roof. I'm picturing something really visible in an eyesore.
No, there is beautiful now metal roofs. There's beautiful metal roofs. But again, it's a question of, there is a question of curb appeal and design that you have to ask yourself. Because, you know, a roof takes a big chunk of the curb appeal of your home. So you want to see if it's actually going to match. There are certain ones that are a bit more tacky, so I would not touch these for any type of home. There are ones that, you know, give you that farmhouse look.
Okay, yeah, that could be nice.
Yeah.
So what happens when it rains, by the way?
If you have the proper gauges, it doesn't really, it's not as, it is louder than you know, shingle roof, but it's not, you know, it's when you go with the cheaper the metal, the cheaper the gauge, the louder the noise.
Okay.
That's pretty much what it is.
But you're going to get noise no matter what.
I mean, you know what, truth be told, if it's pouring hard on shingles, you're hearing.
Well, I guess, you know, yeah, you're
so,
right.
You know, but the, so it, I don't think it's that much of a big variance in the decibels, but as far as if you're doing it, okay, which lasts longer? Metal is a better, if you wish, it's a better candidate.
Wait, but you said metal costs more?
Metal costs more, and there are now better, way better quality shingles, fiberglass based. You know, it's all in the preparation of what's underneath. That's what most people maybe ignore.
Explain.
So, I mean, the metal shingle itself, it's the preparation underneath the decking that, that matters in order to waterproof the roof. In a case of a shingle as well, the ice shield membrane and where to install it and how much to install it is sometimes more important than anything else. You could put you know, a great quality, a luxury shingle, and if you don't put enough ice sheet membrane where you have ice damming and water backing up, well, you know, water is going to come in. Not because of the shingle, but because of the ice shield.
But does so, it, what does one bet, like, because you talk about this ice shielding, is that, like, which is better for our climate here? Is one of these
so
better?
The thing with metal roofs is that it slides the snow way quicker. So that's one aspect that could be good. But in other cases, people tell you, well, I need to install snow metal guards or snow guards because I don't want, you know, to have an avalanche every time I go into my house.
Or shut the door.
That's right.
Yes. We've all seen those videos.
There you go. There you go. So, you know, and some people don't like to install these because they consider them an eyesore. There's a lot of things that you have to kind of consider. So we look at the angle of the roof, the slope of the roof. If you have a very deep slope, a very strong slope, then I would ask questions where to install the snow guards and so on and so forth. It's not as if simple this or that answer. There's a lot of moving parts to this question.
So pros and cons to both?
There's no real cons for shingle because if you go with a good quality shingle, yes, you're paying more for the shingle.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's proven. It's fiberglass. It's this. It's that. And it's still more affordable than metal.
So it's still the most dependable one.
It's still, well, I mean, metal is very dependable. Don't get me wrong. But I'm saying value, price value, I would go with a, you know, good quality ice sheet membrane like Grace. And I would go with a 50-year shingle, like for any roof.
So, okay, if you say that, then that's the one.
For
okay.
any roof. That's my take on it.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to metal roofing, again, you want to look at the design element first. That's the number one decision-making process for you. If it doesn't suit your home, I would not kill my curb appeal for it because it is there forever.
Okay. Somebody wrote in, said metal roofs reduce urban heat island effect. So I guess they reduce what when it's humidity, what do we...
I mean, look, depends. That's all going to boil down to color as well, right? So if you have a black roof, you're not really...
That's
you know,
true. Okay, there's a question here for you. Hello. After the flood, can a toilet be power washed to remove the debris from the flood? Toilet is a one-piece dual flush. Debris has gone into hard-to-reach places, or do I leave it as is? Now, you've talked a lot about the backup that came out of the bathrooms.
Correct.
So should we just throw away the toilet? What happens there?
No. So the good news is that the toilet is, if you have a sewer, I mean, sewer goes inside the toilet every day. If you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, everyone.
So it is safe as far as it's very, you can disinfect it. It's not porous. So, you know, use the right product, use the right cleaning, disinfectants, and you're good to go.
With a power wash?
He says. Well, you don't need to You don't need to go with a power
okay.
wash. Okay. You know, just if you're talking about the exterior of the toilet, just a simple cleanup would do.
Yeah, because a reminder, Walter has said that post-flood, fabrics, anything that had fabric on it, that was probably a couch, and that was probably a goodbye.
Correct.
Metal surfaces or like a toilet.
Correct. Now, the other thing I want to say is you don't want to also remediate a flood by creating another one. So when you're pressure washing, for example, I've seen people actually literally pressure washing their basement. So when you pressure wash their basement, which is crazy, you're adding a lot more humidity to an already infected environment. So relative humidity goes very high. And then just the relative humidity in the air itself starts creating mold spores.
Mm.
So that's where it's really a balancing act. So the idea behind the remediation is to introduce as little dampness as possible to the process to get to the disinfection.
I guess the people were power washing the basement because they thought it's such a good clean, but not realizing that they're just making everything more humid.
That's correct.
Okay.
And it stays humid for a long time after.
From the power wash?
From the power wash. That's correct. I mean, the cement itself, the concrete, when you introduce that much humidity to it, it's not going to dry in one day. It's going to take several days. And in those several days, what you're going to do is you're going to feed the spores a lot and give them a lot more energy to multiply.
514-790-0800. Text. We've got some text messages coming in and a phone call to get to in just a little bit. I do want to say somebody's asking, is the metal roof better for a snow load? You said it helps to melt it, but it can fall on your head.
Snow, I mean, it's better for snow load. That's a good question, actually. Or, you know,
it's just like if you have a heavy snow load, which holds
up? I mean,
up?
Again, you'd... snow metal roofs tend to, you know, melt the snow faster, if you wish, or the snow kind of melts away faster, gets away faster from it. It slides better.
But again, you need the snow guards. That's what. Okay.
In certain cases, if you have a very strong slope, yes.
All right. We have a phone call we're going to get to in just a little bit. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renofco. 9:45 right now. Time to take a look at the roads from our CJAD Traffic Center. Here's Jill Fitzgerald. Jill. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. That is the number to call or text for your questions for Walter Assey, president of Renofco. And we have Bonnie on the line. Bonnie has a question about a combustion stove. Say that three times fast. Bonnie, can you hear us?
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, I have a Pacific Energy Super 27. I've had it for 24 years. I just had it checked by the fire department. They told me that, you know, this was a stove for life. It was submerged August 9th. It's rusting now inside and out. I was told to use steel wool to remove the rust and then to wipe it with a moist cloth. That the heat of the stove when I started heating would simply dry everything out and it would be fine. The pipes were looked at as well and they're okay. They were checked by the fire department too. Apparently everything would be all right. I just want to make sure that I got the right information. It did come from the fire department, but I'm wondering if Walter has any information or experience with this type of problem, because we need that heat now, and of course the whole house has to be rebuilt because of the flood.
Oh, yeah.
So I need at least a stove down there to warm things up, because it's going to take a while for the insulation, the walls, and the floor to be replaced and so on.
So your burners are continuing to spark. There's no issue. You tried it. Everything is
okay.
Lighting up.
Okay, no, there's no burner. This is a slow combustion stove where it's a wood stove.
Oh, wood stove. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's even better. Okay, that's even better. Yeah, so, I mean, the only issue that you're going to have is rust. Anything else is not going to be an issue. And if you need to reapply protection where, I mean, the rust, even if things are dry, you're not going to reverse the effect of the rust. So that have to be treated.
But how do you treat it, Walter? Because I had the fire department and the security, they had the director of security for the fire unit, a very important gentleman around here, he's very well respected, and he said, no, the heat will completely dry it out. No, you don't even have to remove the bricks around the wall inside the firebox, that it would completely dry out, and just to use some dry steel wool, the little tampons, but with no soap, just to get off the major rust and then to wipe it with a moist cloth, and the rest would dry out. Okay. I don't understand.
If the rust is surface, yes. If the rust is starting to corrode, nothing will stop the... Even if you dry it, you're not going to stop the corrosion process.
Okay, so that's what. How long does the corrosion take? Because
well, I mean, it depends. Again, what you do is, yes, you do start with the steel wool just to see if it's just surface rust. And, you know, once you clean it off, there's no actual damage. It's just staining more than rust. Mm-hmm. But if it's actual rust, then you're going to see that with time, it's going to progress. It's going to deteriorate more. So what I would do is I would start with the steel wool, inspect the metal itself. And if I find that the metal is still in good shape, then I'll leave it alone. If I see that it's progressing and it's deteriorating, then I will treat it with a Rust-Oleum product or a heat-resistant type of paint.
Bonnie, does that help you out? Thank you for your call, Bonnie.
No, but the paint doesn't apparently help all that much. It's because what I was told that the rust gets into the little cracks and crannies, and it will just erode away. But I'm being told by even firemen and the director of the security in Sandy, he told me that no, that this would stop once you dry it out. All you have to do is heat it up and dry it out. I'm confused.
Well, nobody's saying it's not going to stop. We don't know how bad it is to see if it's going to stop or not. But if something starts rusting, I don't know how you're going to reverse that effect, to be honest with you. It doesn't make sense. Because rust means corrosion. And corrosion does not... If you dry corrosion, it's not going to reestablish itself. But it might stop degrading in other areas, yes. Or if you have areas where there's water but you still don't have rust, By you using it, it will dry, so it does not rust these new areas.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm good to try it for a year then, and just see what happens. So we'll
try
it this year.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Bonnie. Before we wrap things up for this edition of the Home Improvement Show, Walter wants to talk to all of us about his number one fan and someone that now Walter has become their number one.
Tini Longo is. I mean, I met him this week. And what a meeting that was. It started off by his amazing parents, Giuseppe Longo and Eliza De Luca, telling me that he's my number one fan. Mm. And when I got to meet him, I became his number one fan. He is such an inspiration, this kid. And I can only imagine the challenges that he's going through every day. Yet he's positive, he's beautiful, his smile.
And then we should say he's a quadriplegic.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And what an inspiration. Mm. It was a humbling moment. It made my day, it made my week, it's making my month, and probably even my year.
Mm.
You know, to see how positive he is about life, how he's taking everything in stride, and the teamwork between him and his parents is really, such an inspiration.
Yeah, mom and dad must be real pillars of strength.
They are amazing. The chemistry between them is amazing. The way, you know, it's just a beautiful family. So I just want to send a very heartfelt shout out to them and to tell them really thank you.
Yeah, Anthony, if you're listening, Walter came in here before he sat down. He said, Joanne, I have to tell you about something. I have to tell you about this, that the greatest person I've ever met. And so Anthony and his parents, remind us of parents' names again.
So Giuseppe and Eliza.
Well, Anthony, Giuseppe, and Eliza, thank you so much for listening. And Anthony, I'm looking forward to meeting you one day, hopefully, too. Walter says you're an amazing person. And again, if you think about all the work that these parents put together to make Anthony's life so special and
his
so great.
His smile lights up the room.
I know.
I can tell you, it's you will never, you're not forget. You leave there with...
I'm getting to know Walter, and I can see the emotion in his eyes, and it really affected him. So, Anthony, if you're listening, you keep being you and keep inspiring everyone. That does it for us for this edition of the Home Improvement Show. We'll be back next week with more, and you can catch me on CJAD tomorrow with another edition of Weekends with Joanne Fracas.